Okay, Leon Atkinson, are you what, the father of the bride? Are you
I'm the host of this show.
Well, that too.
But I am also the man that is sitting here extremely excited. I got to go to the airport yesterday afternoon and pick up Andrew York and his lovely wife, Annie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Alex DeGrassi, who's sitting on the other side of Andrew, was picked up by one of his students who studied out at Easton with Michael Millam. And he picked up, because I couldn't get in that early, he picked up Alex and then took him and picked his brain and interviewed him, right, Alex?
Yeah, 2 hours.
2 hours. Well, long interview.
There was lunch in there, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. For a paper that he's writing for school. So, but I'm excited because of the concert tonight. Alex and Andrew are here to do a concert as a part of the guitar series, Friends of the Guitar Hour. And that's going to be at the Bing Crosby Theater tonight at 7:30. So I would highly recommend that even if you have something on your calendar, cross it out, because this is this is not to be missed.
Unless it's this already.
Unless it's this already, exactly. Because they'll be playing alone and together, and we'll talk about that, because both of these guys are known independently extremely well. Alex, I met in 79, I believe it was, when he brought them to him and Scott Cassou and with the George. Was George Winston on that thing?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, I'm trying to remember if George was a part of that. When Alex was a Wyndham Hill guy.
Right.
And they had that Wyndham Hill sampler out, and it kind of got Alex known around, kicked off, and then he's just hasn't stopped moving since then.
Yeah.
And then Alex and I even did a festival together last August?
I think it was October 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Coeur d'Alene, it was.
No, not that one. We did another one together. You forget we did the one at
Icicle Creek. Oh, right. You're right. Yeah. I keep running into you everywhere I go. That's right. Yeah. Icicle Creek. Yeah.
Right. We did the Icicle Creek one together, too. But no, that one, there was the harp gathering.
Yeah.
The harp guitar gathering, and we did that in 2014 in Coeur d'Alene.
Right.
And then we played at the Icicle Creek. And so I've seen you more than I've seen Andrew. I haven't seen Andrew in, I don't know, 19 or 20 years.
Something like that. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. And we played on the same builder's guitar for a while. I still play. I had him build a Hauser copy for me.
Oh, yeah?
Eric Saline. Oh, nice. I should have brought it. It's a great guitar. I mean, it's to die for. It's a great, great guitar. And Andrew was playing Eric Saline's guitars many years ago. What are you playing on now, Andrew?
I play. I have a couple different things, but a David Daly right now.
Oh, Daly! I know Daly. Yeah. Hey, nice, good builder.
Yeah, he's wonderful too.
Good builder. Yeah. Nice man too.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so we're here. I do my usual questioning. I've done this with Alex already, so I'm going to start with you, Andrew.
Okay.
So, because just typical questions that I'll ask a new artist that I have in. You're not a new artist, but a new artist to the station with me.
Right, right.
What inspired you to play the guitar?
A musical family. My father's a guitar player. My uncle, too, and my mom sang professionally in clubs when she was young for a while. And so family gatherings were a real folk fest. You know, we would do, you know, I still know dozens and dozens of, you know, Irish, English, Civil War era folk songs, all these things. That's what I began with.
That's interesting. I began playing as a folk guitarist also.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Alex?
No,
I don't know if you knew that. I think I might have told you that before.
You mentioned that, yeah.
I was studying folk guitar.
Yeah.
And luckily, the teacher, Mark Ulf, I was studying at the Henry Street Settlement, a Jewish settlement house. I told you, my grandfather was a rabbi.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought, look on your face when I said it. But at the settlement house in New York, in Lower East Side, and I studied with Mark Oath, and he taught me PIMA, and he taught me all the proper things that a classical teacher teaches a classical guitar student.
Right. Yeah.
And he had a great sounding guitar. I don't know what it was to this day, but it was a great sounding guitar. And so I learned folk songs, and I sang, you know, Lost My Partner and Down in the Valley and all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was learning how to play classical guitar and reading music, which was unusual when people were studying folk in those days especially.
Right, yeah.
So,
right.
So we have that in common.
Yeah.
And then Alex is known, I would say probably the best, no, I won't even classify it, known very well for being a member for 16 years of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew.
Did I say Alex?
Yeah.
Thank you. Keep me on track.
Both our names have four letters. You know,
Andy, and they both start
Alex
with A.
Andy, you know, and so.
And I'm not awake yet. Yeah. You guys kept me up too late last night.
I've only had three cups of coffee. I need a couple more.
Yeah.
And but anyway, Andrew, I remember, closer to me, Andrew, yeah, further yeah. away, Alex. Okay. Yeah. Andrew was very well known, and he was a member for 16 years of the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. And I want to explore that first a little bit. I'm not complaining anything from that today, but we have done that already. And I know you wrote a lot of the material, composed a lot of the material, and probably were involved with arranging some of it too. And
yeah, sure.
For that group. And I, when you guys started getting hip and using the acronym LAGQ.
Yeah, that was right after I joined. Then we got hip.
I see, okay. And I was really like, gee, LAGQ, it took me a while to get used to making the association of LAGQ with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet. Yeah. But now I'm hip too, finally.
Yeah.
It took me a lot of years to get there. So let's talk to you a little bit about that experience, because you as an ensemble player with that group, the tightness and the phrasing and then different personalities. I know Bill Cannon guys are real well. I've known Bill for a million years. I know Scott Tannen. And so you got four different personalities making music together. What was that like?
Well, it was a really wonderful experience, first of all. I mean, we reached every goal I would have had for the group.
Nice.
Incredibly fine musical experience. I think part of the different personalities and the intensity of our musical ideas led to a real possibility of direction, but also a tension. And maybe that tension kind of fueled our success in a way. You know, it's difficult when you get four very strong personalities.
And I know.
The fact that we lasted so long is impressive, you know.
It is.
It wasn't always easy, but it was always rewarding. And, you know, I finally left just for artistic reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, I had done that long enough, but I have, you know, kind of a wide palette of goals I wanted to reach that didn't include being an ensemble member for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really honor what we did. But it was you know, truly we were the best. There was just, you know, we
well, there's no doubt about it.
Level, you know?
I've spoken about that on the show last week. I think it was last week, Vern. Remind me if I'm wrong, where I brought out a bunch of guitar ensembles that, see, we're in the new station now. I have to keep saying that. And the library is lit. And in the old station, the guitar music was back in this little corner, and I couldn't see in the darkness. I'd have to get Vern to run back and find things for me. And now I'm finding all kinds of things I didn't know the station had. So I brought in these ensembles, one Santa Fe guitar ensemble, who I do know,
sure. And
I play them, and they're good. I enjoy their playing.
There's some great ones out there now.
Yeah, they are. But they were all, I would say, I'll venture to say, they were all inspired by you guys.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, we moved it into a new domain.
Yes, you
making
did.
I mean, our Grammy was for classical crossover, and that sort of speaks to what we were doing. Still keeping classical roots, but moving into new directions.
And then you did a klezmer. Were you
with
that? Yeah,
sure. That was our first Sony record. That was our first. We'd had many records before that, maybe five together.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first one we did on Sony Classical.
Okay. And then what? The klezmer thing, I'm going to that just because of the Jewish heritage on my part.
Yeah.
What was that like for you as a part of that?
That was fantastic. Production? It was really great to, what was that? Leo Chelyapov, we met this clarinet player, just fantastic. And he was such a hot klezmer player that we ended up just arranging all this music and getting it. Working with Leo, that was fantastic. We toured with that stuff for a while. He would join us on tour sometimes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Well, and when I first listened to it, I thought, these guys are inside the pocket of klezmer music.
Yeah.
You really were.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, these guys are stretching.
You know, here's part of the thing about, you know, we all had multi-style backgrounds, me the most of all, you know, coming from a jazz background, folk and all these things. But we tried, every time we moved in a new stylistic direction, to do it in an authentic way. And that's very difficult. You know, a lot of classical players sound peculiar when they stretch beyond their boundaries.
And, totally. You know,
we tried to do it. I worked very hard to make sure that whatever style we did sounded right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, whatever it was, adding rock energy or whatever we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
We were successful most of the time, not always. Some of our Brazilian we learned later, you know, like we'd hear a recording later and then meet with Sergio Sá, and he'd say, you should have played this like that. Then it's like so clear.
A little more inside the accent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He would just, then it was like, it made so much sense. But you live and learn. But we really made a deep effort to be authentic.
Had you guys ever been to Brazil as a group?
As a group, no.
No, okay. Because the first time I went to Brazil, I got invited over by, this is terrible. Help me, Vern. He played piano and the accordion. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, accordion. I was thinking
Gismonti. No, not Piazzolla.
You don't mean Gismonti.
No. I work with Belafonte. Okay, I'll leave this. I'll come back to it. But when you go to Brazil and one, any little kid on the street can tap a rhythm that is so incredibly sophisticated that you're like, oh my God, how do they do, and how do they get that off? And you know, it's amazing.
It's just part of their culture from such an early age. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it really, really is. After you left the group, and I didn't realize that he had been in it that long, I was interviewing the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet up at the Crown of the Continent guitar deal in Whitefish, Montana. Thank you. And Andy, who's with the group now.
You mean Matt, that replaced me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's not Andy. Is that not Andy?
No, I'm Andy.
And that's right.
Yeah, so he's
Matt. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I'm not awake yet.
That's
I keep
okay.
saying that.
That's all right. He looks a lot like me. It confuses people.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't?
No.
Well,
that's me.
In fact, I think it might actually be me. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm Matt. I don't know. Who am I?
Okay. Anyway, they did an album with a very Brazilian sound after he was in it.
Yeah, they did. That's right.
And it was very good. I feel right inside the pocket of the Brazilian.
Well, right when I left, I started working with, I can't think of her name, a really well-known Brazilian singer.
Yes.
And I think all of these things, you know, gradually that began to mature in the group.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a lot of Brazilian music when I was in it. And, you know, Sergio had written pieces for Sergio Assad.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's a style that none of us really had in the pocket. But that was an ongoing work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I would like to talk about you after you left the group now.
Okay.
And you wanted to expand your horizons, go to new areas. So what was your first target after you left the group?
I had a lot. The first thing I did was a record where I collaborated with Andy Summers and also did with a Japanese classical pianist and a great improvisatory American pianist that lives in Sebastopol. So this was just a complete collaboration where half of it was free improvisation. So I was just hungry to do things that were very much out of the box, things that, you know, I was crazy to do that. And now, of course, I'm settling into doing things like playing with Alex. This is, to me, really great to do collaboration with other artists that are, you know, moving in different stylistic directions. I just love doing this. This is what I wanted to do.
You use the word settling into, and I don't know if I would agree with that word. I guess it's your choice of words, but settling into kind of means like you're kicking back, and I don't think you guys are kicking back.
No, we're not kickback guys. Okay.
But it's nice. The exploring is wonderful. I want to talk to you about your ballet, the exploring with the ballet group also. But first, I'm talking too much, and we're talking too much, so that people can get a sample of what you sound like, because they're going to get to hear you alone tonight.
Okay.
And then you settling in with Alex.
Yeah.
But this is his newest CD. And what's the title of that?
This is the title cut. The CD and piece is Yamour, which doesn't mean anything. It's Y-A-M-O-U-R. It's a long story behind that, which we will not go into right now. But,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Andrew York, my guest in the studio, one of my guests in the studio, and it's called Yamua. We were speaking while that was playing, and I did listen, but I was also trying to pick more information out of Andrew here, and I'm getting there. Yeah. You won a Grammy. This particular project won 2 Grammys, and there was 3 guitarists on, you said.
Mm-hmm.
And the guitarists that I've played here and know and have talked about, Adam Del Monte,
yep.
Who is touring now with Mark Gergich.
Oh, yeah.
And you, our guest tonight on the concert, Andrew York, and
Bill Kanagar?
No, Bill Kanagar, yeah. the other member, yeah. From the LAGQ. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that just briefly. I don't want to cut Alex short on coverage today.
Hey, I'm fascinated. I'm just listening. So.
Okay.
So briefly what happened, our agent at the time, the quartet's agent, I was still with the quartet, hooked us up with Osvaldo Golijov, the Argentine composer, really fantastic classical composer, but using modern elements. So Scott and John of the quartet did another project later, but Bill and I did the first one, Inadamar, which Golijov wrote on the death of Garcia Lorca, the Spanish poet.
Yes.
So Golijov wrote this full orchestra with percussion. So there was a guy playing cajon with the orchestra. Ooh. And congas, and then there was a guy with a computer. It would have been tape in the old days, but you know, with sound effects, guns, things like that for the death, but, and people speaking. It was extremely dramatic, and 3 guitar parts. Actually, there were 2. Bill and I were doing it, but it was so flamenco heavy being Spanish that we suggested they bring in Adam, close personal friend of ours. Mm-hmm. So, and we did all things together. We kind of divided up the 3 parts and gave the super flamenco bits to Adam, because neither Bill and I, you know, were real flamenco players. We wanted to have that right Rascato sound. So that, and there were 6 singers, and the main star of the singer was Dawn Upshaw. She was the main soprano, yeah, for that.
Wow.
So it was recorded. We did it in Atlanta and recorded it for Deutsche Grammophon, and it was released. And that record was extremely popular. It was, I think, Golijov's biggest hit. That we toured for years and years. In fact, Adam continued touring with the group. I toured a little bit with it, just did a couple concerts playing the part, the guitar part. But mm-hmm. Adam, it was his, you know, for I don't know, a couple of years, he was going around playing with different orchestras when they would play Inadamar.
And Adam, not to digress, but I want to talk about this a little bit. Guitarists like yourself, like Adam, like me, Adam won the GFA, if I remember correctly.
You know, I don't remember. He might have.
Yes.
He's a fantastic player.
And on the classical side. Okay, yeah. And I was, it was the GFA thing, and I was there, and he was going to play, and I was sitting next to this classical snob person, and she said, "Oh God, how did they let him win? He's a flamenco player, you know what I mean?" And so he came out and he played a Bach thing, and he played it so fantastically that the entire place was on their feet spontaneously.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, "Well, stick this in your pipe and smoke it."
Exactly. You know. Yeah.
So my question is, as a guitarist who, and I hate the term crossover personally, but people will know what I'm talking about to use that term. As a crossover guitarist that plays classical, classically trained, plays jazz, plays lots of different styles, you play the instrument.
Yeah.
What's your reception been in the classical guitar world?
Well, crossover is a pejorative term. I don't like it either. Yeah. I don't like categories in general, because I think any real artist is sort of trying to be free of definitions or categories.
Right.
So it depends on the person. Like there are those very uptight people like you were sitting next to. They're going to exist, and you can't let it get you down. But there, a lot of the younger players in the classical world, their ears are opening, and they're willing to really be much more well-rounded musicians. I mean, now that I'm teaching at Cal State Fullerton in L.A., I really encourage this kind of awareness of other styles, and there shouldn't be too many limits placed on classical studies.
I agree totally. And now with that, that's a perfect segue into the man sitting next to you, Alex Degrassi. Alex Degrassi, as I said, I met him in 79, and then in 1980, I started a festival in Sandpoint called the Music and Fine Arts Celebration up at Schweitzer, the ski resort. And I had Alex was one of the artists I brought out, and I had Philip Roschiger there, also a great classical guitarist who just died. And Philip wasn't a snob about non-classical players, but he was kind of a technical snob, definitely in terms of his, you know. And so Alex performed, and he said to me, "That guy's got a great left hand." And then they became good friends after that. You know, Alex and I were talking about it last night. So, but Alex, you play with nails. You even hold the guitar more so now than you used to, I think, in almost a classical position. Not exactly, but similar.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and you're teaching now. I remember we did a thing in Sun Valley, Idaho.
Right.
Many years ago.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. And as a group, I produced, I forget who I had on it, but anyway, and you were there and I was there, and Liz Story.
Oh, right. Yeah. Was pianist there, who recorded pianist, for Windmill. Right. Yeah.
And I wanted you to do kind of a seminar, a teaching seminar. You said, man, I'm not the teacher, you know. You're the teacher. You do that stuff. And now you're doing that stuff. There's a program in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, I started just a little background real quick. You know, I started about as a kid playing folk and blues, you know, and so in some ways not so different than Andy. I was telling somebody last night that I used to play a slide guitar a lot, and I learned how to, like, I learned Lead Belly songs and Book of White, and I loved that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Mississippi John Hurt and all that kind of stuff. Mississippi John Hurt, of course, was a great fingerstyle mm-hmm. guitar player. You know, I kind of went through the folk thing when I was a kid, the British Isles folk and blues, learned all the Paul Simon songs and stuff like that. And then, you know, I played a little bit, I learned a few simple Bach pieces. Mm-hmm. I'd played trumpet as a kid, so I knew how to read music, but I didn't really want to do that when I picked up the guitar. I was all by ear. Mm-hmm. And then when I went off to college, I took a little of the music course and I studied jazz guitar, but I was still mostly doing chord, you know, looking at chord charts and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then I never really put the two worlds together, writing four-part harmonies and then going home and tuning the guitar into some weird tuning mm-hmm. and playing and not thinking even about what time signature I'm in mm-hmm. or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. So it was kind of a separate universe from mm-hmm. any studying that I'd done, which was fairly minimal by compared to, you know, Andy, for example. So, you know, my career got launched and I started playing a lot. And when I first got asked to start teaching, I said, well, you know, I barely know what I'm doing. Right, you know, yeah. I'm flying on instinct here. And you know, I remember the first one I did was the upstate New York at the Omega Institute. Okay. I got asked to come up and teach a week there. And they had some really great players. Bobby McFerrin was there that week, David Darling, cellist, and really a great event. It was the Arts Week. And the first day I had 15 students in the class, and I had to like try to my first attempt at teaching a group. And I was so exhausted by the end of the day. I went back to the cabin, didn't have any dinner. I just fell face forward down on the bed and slept for about 13 hours and got up the next morning and went, oh, man, now what am I going to do? You know, it was so exhausting and overwhelming because I hadn't had the experience of sort of organizing my thoughts and trying to present what I did. And that was a real changing point in my life. And then the next one was when I transcribed my first book of guitar pieces in 1990 for Hal Leonard. And, you know, I actually did the work myself with the help of an editor. And I started going, oh, yeah, this is in 3/4, but there's a measure of 4 in there. I never really thought about it. I just thought it was kind of a cool thing that I was doing. And, you know, I learned a lot by that. So I kind of learned the hard way. And along the way, as you said, I met Phil Roschiger. Mm-hmm. And I used to call Phil up late at night and say, Phil, I'm trying to learn something. You know, what should I play? What classical guitar? He says, well, just get some Villalobos and some Barrios and, you know, get some Piazzolla and call me if you have any problems. And so I'd call him like at 1 o'clock in the morning because we were young and we were up late all the time. Phil, okay, so how do you play this classical tremolo? So I got some, you know, very good advice from some very talented, well-educated classical guitarists as well. So this is all by way of saying over the years, I've finally started to actually be able to break down what it is I do and understand and teach and make presentations. And it kind of comes hand in hand. My career has, I think, what's been interesting for me is to see that someone like myself, who was inspired by people like John Fahey and Leo Kottke initially, and Ralph Towner, as well as John Renborn and Bert Janssen, and Mississippi John Hurt, and all these things, that now today my career has kind of paralleled the way I've learned how to write and codify what I do to a certain extent and turn around and teach it. It's kind of simultaneous with what's happening in the academic world. So you made reference to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. They have the first accredited fingerstyle guitar program where you can get your master's degree. And I've been invited out there to teach, make presentations, play concerts, work with the students. And so it feels like, hey, you know, that we kind of have a place now in that world, you know, whereas I think, if I understand correctly, in the classical guitar world, it was a similar kind of thing, but it started maybe 30, 40 years
back. And I just judged an international competition down in Tucson, and I was talking to some of the judges, and I said, you know, if this was the level when I started, I wouldn't have been in the door.
Yeah.
It has changed. The level has gone up so – I came back and told Vern that. Level has gone up so much. It's so wonderful to see.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful to see. Andy sitting next to me is smiling, but it's true.
Oh, it is. The technical level is really improved.
It's mind-boggling. It's the same thing with the steel string players. You know, sort of a shameless plug here, but I do this summer guitar workshop every year. Mendocino Intensive Summer Guitar Workshop.
Andy's going to
join me. Mm-hmm. This first year I've brought another teacher in to teach full time. So that's July 12th through 17th, actually. And it runs concurrent with the Mendocino Music Festival. So it presents a nice opportunity of Andy and I will play a concert at the festival, and we're going to bring the students in for a piece, which we haven't really got started, but we'll be there.
Yeah, it's too bad in such an ugly place, but other than that, it's going to be great.
Yeah, but we also have I've just noticed in the last 5 years in particular, because I've been doing this workshop for 17 years, mm-hmm. it's really the level's just going way up, and we're getting more and more interesting enough younger people coming. Yeah. You know, first it was kind of more the middle-aged you know, guitar players who played
amateurs,
when they were young, and then they went on to some other career, and we call them the doctors, lawyers, software engineers. Mm-hmm. Now they have a nice guitar, and the kids are grown up, and they can come. But now we're getting lots of young kids, teenagers, high school
That's
kids,
wonderful.
And we are finally able to offer a few scholarships, and we're getting applications from people from the age of like 14 to about 19 years old.
Wonderful.
And they send their YouTube demos in, and I'm just going, Whoa, I better practice if I'm going to, you know, claim to be able to teach these guys something. Yeah. So.
Okay, well, time is going too fast. I'm enjoying this too much. I think you guys are too, and I'm sure the listeners are. This is Alex DeGrassi speaking now, and Andrew York, both sitting to my left. They're in town to do a concert tonight at the Bing Crosby Theater, 7:30. Tickets are available at Tickets West. And I think I'm going to stop the words right now and let you listen to the sounds of Alex DeGrassi. What are you going to play for us?
When Johnny Comes Marching Home.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. Alex Degrassi and his Johnny Come Marching Home. We heard him marching home there again at the end. Thank goodness he got back.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay, we're running out of time, so I want to talk to you two about the collaboration. And I forget the quote, but where a classical guitarist and a steel string guitarist come together with different backgrounds and come together and present this wonderful collaboration. Let's talk about it. Who wants to talk first?
Well, I guess I'll start.
Okay, this is Alex.
In the absence of anybody else. You know, I was familiar with Andy's music. I'd heard a lot of his solo records, and of course I'd heard some of the LA Guitar Quartet records. And I remember this because I was reading Fingerstyle Guitar magazine, mm-hmm. and there was an article in there about Andy. It was an interview with him, and mm-hmm. he was talking that he was leaving the quartet. He wanted to, you know, explore some other things and some collaborations. And I think I might have actually contacted you.
I think you called me
said,
up, yeah.
Hey, yeah. Well, that's you want to do something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
and,
so you were the
spark. I think that's how it started.
Yeah. We started having long conversations. I remember walking around on my deck in the backyard talking to Alex, and we talked sometimes for, the first couple of times, like 45 minutes, an hour. We had long, and we were exploring ideas. You even thought of a quartet for a little while. And I drew the lines like, you know, no.
He was like,
another
no,
quartet.
Man,
no, can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, the idea of steel string and nylon string and, you know, putting that together. See, because I was coming from the other end. I was mm-hmm. like, I'd been playing solo.
Right.
I was like hungry to collaborate, do something different.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was walking around my garden while you were walking around your deck.
Oh, I could picture that.
Okay, so tonight we don't, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, we don't have any collaboration music for you to listen to now. So I said, unfortunately. There is an MP3, which I just found out about three minutes ago, and I would have had them bring it into the station so you could get a little ear sample. But now you have to come to hear it live.
That's right.
And it's nothing like a live performance to inspire you, to get you all the juices going, and you go home and you take up your instrument and you practice for 7 hours.
That's right. Don't forget, YouTube is two-dimensional.
That's right.
That's
true.
Right.
It is. So tonight at the Bing Crosby Theater, Andrew York, Alex Degrassi, playing alone and with their collaboration.
Actually, I want to come in here and ask them to talk a little bit more about, it's one thing to say you're collaborating, but where's the starting point? Does one of you start? Does one of you have a tune? Are you improvising? Talk a little bit about the actual moment.
Well, you know, we're going to do each a short solo set, but then we've actually prepared, we've rehearsed a bunch of different pieces in different styles. I mean, Alex wrote this amazing piece called Zero Gravity. It's an incredibly challenging, kind of very modern piece, which has got a whole huge story behind it, which Alex can go, I don't know if we have time, but he can do if he wants to.
But this
is really incredible. I mean, it's very much a classical piece, intensely developed, very, very difficult to play. I mean, it's incredible. So Alex is writing the really challenging stuff, you know? And, you know, I've given some very folkloric pieces, so we're kind of trading roles. But we've practiced, you know, long story short, various pieces in different styles that we've arranged, created, written, things like that.
Yeah, so Andy, of course, has composed a lot of music, not just for solo guitar, but for duos and trios and quartets and all kinds of settings. So he pulled out some that he thought would work well with steel string guitar. And I love the piece. We actually recorded one of his pieces a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's in the vault, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
It's in the vault right now, but
out.
It's called Dysfunction, D-I-S-S, funk, S-H-U-N. So there's, and it's a really cool piece, and I love playing that piece, and it's pretty funky, and it sounds really good with the steel and the nylon together.
Yeah.
And then we've got a couple other pieces. We do an arrangement of Paint It Black, the Stones tune, but we balkanized it. We do it in 7/8, and we have a couple other things. The piece Zero Gravity that Andy mentioned was inspired because some years ago I got an email one day from an astronaut, and he said, I'm a doctor, I'm a medical doctor, I'm an astronaut, and I'm going up on the space shuttle Endeavour. And he said, I'm going to take one of your CDs. It was my Deep at Night CD. And when he came back, he sent me some photographs of holding the the disc in front of the window of the Endeavor, and you know, it's floating in the air. And then they sent me a montage with a picture of the space shuttle, the space station, and the crew, and a crew patch, and I was just and then the CD mounted in there with a little NASA approved thing that said this CD has traveled 248 times around, orbited around the Earth 248 times, 6.2 million miles, whatever it was, and I got it and I said, wow, now that talking about getting a lot of spin on your recording. That's sort of the ultimate spin right there. Yeah.
That's great.
And so I got to be friends, and we through my conversations with him, and eventually I had a phone call with him when he was later up on the space station. We had a video call, so we were watching each other on video, and I played a couple pieces for the crew, and then he took me on a tour. Camera. I was inspired to write this piece, and I also spoke to him when he came back, and had a lot of conversations about what it feels like to be in space. And so, I started writing this. What was intended to be a suite, but we've only really got this first piece down.
And that'll be on the concert tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
They say
so.
You have
to come and hear these two men, Alex Degrassi, Andrew York, performing together. I'm going to have you listen to them individually now. And who should we start with?
How about Myers Rag?
Sure.
Okay, this is Myers Rag.
A little short taste. Yes, this is an improvisation I did for my daughter. It's a little ragtime piece. So, there you go.
Myers Rag, a song written by Andrew York for his daughter, Maya.
Yeah.
And wonderful, wonderful. Okay, and now we're going to listen to a little bit of Alex Degrassi, and this is his tune, Shortening Bread.
Thank you.
was Alex Degrassi, and since Alex just played that for us, Alex, I want you to just speak, say something to the audience so they'll want to come and see you tonight.
You know, you can listen to the radio and your CDs all you want, but you'll never achieve or hear the same kind of magic as you do when you go out and listen to live music. And we're playing, I haven't been in the Bing yet, but I understand it's a very nice hall.
Right.
And it's an opportunity to really hear in 3D what guitars sound like.
Good.
And
yeah.
Andrew?
Well, as an example, you know, if I ask somebody my age, you know, did you ever see Miles Davis live? And if they say yes, I'm incredibly jealous because I never did. But, you know, if they had said, no, but I've seen his videos and heard his records, of course, that's not the same thing. So come see us live before, you know,
well,
we
die. Before you die. To make you jealous, I have seen Miles live. I actually played at the Village Vanguard.
I saw him play.
Opposite with Nina Simone. But that said, the concert tonight, if this was a video, you'd see how animated I am. My hands are going, I'm shaking. I'm so excited to have these two guys here in our community. You be excited and come out and hear this magnificent concert that's going to happen at the Bing Crosby Theater tonight, 7:30. Tickets are available at Tickets West. See you there.
And there it is, the Guitar Hour with our guests in the studio, Andrew York and Alex Degrassi. Great to have you both in town.